Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast, Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky coming to you on Monday. It's been a busy week for the Lakers, Andy. We didn't even get a chance to talk about
Monday, May 2nd.
Yes. Well, it could be any Monday, really.
But right, but this not. Particular this, Monday this is big because of everything that happened in the week leading up to
it. We didn't get a chance to talk about last week's news before the Lakers made that obsolete, Andy. They're not booing. Andy, the people, they're not booing, they're saying Luke.
Yep. Last week's news, Byron Scott getting fired. I believe on a Sunday, it was during Game of Thrones, winter came for Byron Scott. But less than a week later,
Do you think they were watching it and were just like, you know what? Let's get in the spirit of things. Let's lop off a head.
You know what? It does give you courage.
It's a very powerful show.
Right. But then 5 days later, the Lakers dropped the news, officially hiring Luke Walton. This is not rumor. They have confirmed this their website.
No, they sent out a press release.
Exactly. Well, the press release is what's on the website as well. It's multi-purpose.
In a moment of synergy, they put the same things out.
Who says that this front office, isn't on the same page?
Luke's talked about it. I mean, everybody, this is no longer speculative. So we will obviously get into all of that. That the Luke hiring, what it means to have Luke Walton back, what it means that maybe they didn't look anywhere else. We have Andy. Just because Luke Walton's back does not mean we stop digging into the secret vault of LaMarcus Aldridge free agent pitch meeting.
One has nothing to do with the other. No. I mean, look, Luke Walton is the coach. The free agents are the free agents. And just because Luke Walton is brought in part because people think he'll be a very good recruiter doesn't mean he can fix everything that went wrong by himself. And we have a lot of audio.
Yeah, so we have that coming up. This week's Lakers statue, it feels apropos to me, is Byron Scott.
Yep.
So we'll tell you where Byron gets his statue later on in the show. And we will cap Andy the week with This Week in Magic Tweets, because Magic Johnson, who is a Twitter superstar, as we all know.
As I've described him for, the GOAT, the greatest of all time, he's the GWTWOAT, the greatest tweeter of all time.
The kids would say he's on fleek.
Oh, yeah. His
Twitter feed is lit.
He is a 6'9" fire emoji in the eyes of the kids.
We'll get into all that. And, of course, all that coming after we get through the big headlines in the NBA. Andy, we start in New York, where Carmelo Anthony is making it abundantly clear he really doesn't want Kurt Rambis to be his head coach. Like, it couldn't be. Short of him saying, I don't want Kurt Rambis to be my head coach, it really couldn't be any more clear. And yet, Phil Jackson seems to be, if not flirting with, I don't know, maybe even canoodling with the idea of having Kurt be the permanent head coach in New York, particularly now that Luke Walton is off the market.
Well, also, too, and this is really where I think Melo is taking issue with this coaching search going on with the Knicks. It seems to be all people that Phil Jackson either knows or is familiar with or is convinced will run the triangle. David Blatt, for example, is a name that's being bandied about. We'll get an interview, which beyond the optics of bringing out a guy that got famously run out of town in just over one season from the Cavaliers, you're bringing in the coach that Melo's best friend LeBron fired in Cleveland.
It's hard to feel like you're going to get a guy, he's going to get a real fair shake there once he gets in the locker room.
Exactly. I mean, this is the last guy that you would think to bring in to coach Melo, since I have to imagine Carmelo Anthony has heard an awful lot of bad things about David Blatt from LeBron. There's basically been talk mostly just of guys who will run the triangle. And that seems to be the number one item on, really the number one and maybe only item for Phil Jackson when it comes to picking a coach. And Melo's made it very clear that he feels like there should, be a process, one that's more expansive.
Quote, if you don't go through the process and you don't at least look to see who's out there, then we have a problem. Yeah, Melo said that in a radio interview.
And he's also said, too, that he feels like, yes, you want a system, but at the end of the day, players win games, and you need to make sure that you are bringing in either the right players for this system, or if, say, those players don't exist, find a different system to fit the type of players that you can get, because ultimately that's how you're going to win.
Yep. Melo wants a process, Andy. The Lakers didn't have much of a process. The Lakers went and got Luke Walton. That is not what Carmelo Anthony wants. He wants a process.
By the way, too, it should be noted, Luke Walton has said he does not feel the triangle is actually the correct offense for the players the Lakers have. Doesn't feel like force-feeding it to him. And also, it sort of underscores the idea of, if triangle is a requirement, then the field of candidates that you're going to have to coach your team may very well be Kurt Rambis. I also feel like, too, and I said this before, I mean, a couple years ago, and I said this right after the Knicks drafted Porzingis, who obviously turned out well, but I think people thought might not have been quite as ready for the NBA as he is. Brian, I think this is all part of Phil passive-aggressively trying to get Melo to demand a trade.
Well,
I really do.
I think
he's being antagonistic with his star player. I mean, he's going out of his way to alienate the guy.
If it takes hiring Kurt Rambis to get Carmelo Anthony out of town, that is very drastic. I think that's a very drastic measure, Andy.
Well, but I also think, though, I mean, and this is, again, part of the reason why when the Knicks announced they are hiring Phil, I had been very skeptical about Phil as a front office guy, as much respect as I have for him as a coach, and I really enjoyed covering him. His, as expansive a thinker as Phil is on most things, when it comes to basketball, he's not particularly forward-thinking. I mean, he's never really given
that.
Pretty
dogmatic.
Yeah, he really is. And I think this is starting to become problematic for the Knicks and for Carmelo Anthony. And Melo has never struck me as a Phil type of guy and a triangle type of guy. I wonder if he had totally.
Although
his
the reviews of him, you know, working inside the offense last year were good.
I guess, but it's pretty clear it's not Melo's favorite offense.
It's either, but it's very clear. Doesn't want to be coached by Kurt Rambis.
No, he does not.
Andy, the Clippers, they had their exit interviews today, and the exit interview consisted of Doc Rivers. I went down there Monday and listened to Doc talk. They were injured, and then they were eliminated. And the big question that came up over and over and over again is, what do they do now? In one form or another, what do you do if you're the Clippers? Because, in theory, they were as hot as, despite everything that happened this year, the Blake punch and the injuries and all that, they were as hot as any team in the league going into the playoffs. They blew up Portland in game one and two. They won it. Was it just game one or two? Whatever it was.
They were up 2-0.
Right. And then everybody got hurt. So what do you do with this group? They lost again. They've lost every year as this nucleus is going. But you, I don't know. Would you break him up? What do you do with the Clippers?
I would. If it would be difficult right now because Chris Paul's coming off injury. Blake Griffin, who was probably your best trade chip, he's coming off injury. You know,
well, CP's injury especially is just a broken hand. That'll heal.
Right, but
I don't think that's going to be one that freaks people out.
No, but he's getting a year older with more injuries. There's always been injuries.
Can opt out next year. That's the big one.
Right, there's always been concern about Chris and injuries in general. But I just feel like this group, especially their big three, I don't think individually DeAndre, Blake, or Chris is the problem, but collectively they don't seem to be the solution, because even though they were playing well heading into the playoffs, over the majority of this season, and really the last couple, if you looked at them and said, do they look good enough to take out the elite teams in a series, the answer is no.
Probably
they have
not.
They have not been getting any better, and the window for a team like Golden State, or the way San Antonio has been able to just keep reconfiguring itself, the Spurs, it ain't closing anytime soon.
It was funny. Doc actually said, you know, your window is always closing. He said, it's always closing.
Yes, it is.
No matter who you are, he said, it's always closing. And then somebody asked him about San Antonio, and he said, they just keep getting different windows. Like that, which is true. They just keep remaking themselves and remaking themselves and remaking themselves. And the thing that allows them to do that, to give them the flexibility, is they've won. Once you win, then guys will take less. Guys will do it. I mean, until you get that, you're in a situation where the Clippers are, where you have three max deals, and it's hard to work around them. You can look at it two ways. You could look at it and say exactly what you're saying, and I think ultimately you're right. I don't know how you improve the team.
I'm not sure.
Based
either.
On, you know, by trading CP or Blake.
I do think they need depth.
They absolutely do.
And maybe trading a guy like Blake Griffin, if, say, you couldn't do, like, the rumored one-for-one swap with Durant and OKC.
Let's just say you can't do that.
Let's just say you can't.
Hypothetically. Can't trade him straight up for KD.
Let's just say hypothetically you can't. If, say, you take a guy like Griffin and you don't trade him for pennies on the dollar, but maybe, like, what would be considered 70 cents on the dollar, you might add enough depth where, right, overall you're a better team.
A dollar's worth of quarters.
Exactly.
Maybe. But it's hard to get better, but at the same time, it's, you know, you have to try something, probably. But the flip side of it is the Clippers are actually a decent example, and certainly this postseason is a decent example. Steph got hurt. Everybody was really excited. And the Clippers seem to have a path, actually, to the Western Conference Finals, at least against a diminished Warriors team, and then they got hurt. So you see stuff happens. You know, Oklahoma City last year, they were a favorite. Guys get hurt, they don't make the playoffs. And so
I've said it, Brian.
Stuff can happen.
Brian, I have said it before, and I will say it again. The Clippers curse is real, and it will not go away until they formally disassociate with number one fan Shelley Sterling.
Shame.
Yeah, for real. She was complicit. She was the health inspector. She had dirty hands just like Donald Sterling.
She's not a health inspector.
Till they formally disassociate with their number one fan, they're never going to lift this curse.
All right, finally, Space Jam 2, Andy, it has a director. And he is Justin Lin. He is the director of the Fast and Furious movies 3 through 6. That includes Tokyo Drift. And then through number 6, that's the one before the one where Paul Walker died. He's directed the Star Trek Beyond. That's the new Star Trek movie this summer. Beyond what? I'm not sure. It seems like they've been everywhere at this point. You are the resident Fast and Furious expert on this podcast. Is this a good fit for Space Jam 2?
You know what?
Justin Lin.
Based on specifically Justin Lin's Fast and the Furious filmography itself, very difficult to tell. Because in my humble opinion, and this is also a humble opinion that I am correct, the ranking of Fast and Furious movies goes as such. From worst to best, Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, which is the fourth, Furious 7, which I have to say, I'm going to watch it again.
Wait, the fourth one was just named Fast and Furious?
Fast and Furious.
Oh, right. They took out the...
Yes.
And the...
Yes.
Okay.
They were just shortening it. Fast and Furious. It was like the ill-fated operation under the Obama administration. Fast and Furious. Then from there, Furious 7, which I'm going to watch again, but I have to say I was disappointed by. The trailers looked amazing. Didn't love it. Then from there...
Is that the one where the car jumps out of the building into another building?
Yes, it does.
That looked cool.
That scene's great. The rest of the movie, I was a little
underwhelmed. You ever done that in your Honda?
Yes. Just actually. Tell you, man, you can drive those things into the ground.
They really are very, very, very solid.
Well, it also helps, too. I have a stick.
Right. you got to get some RPMs.
You got some RPMs, and you have more control over the car. You can't do that in an automatic.
And I tell you what, the cool thing about doing that move is it's so cool. Even the people whose buildings you've destroyed, they don't mind.
Oh, they thought that was
boss.
That
was really neat. Yeah.
They thought that was boss. Anyway, do not interrupt me. This is for people to help follow along.
Was that an interview?
From worst to best,
okay.
It is Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift, that's the third, Fast and Furious, that's the fourth, Furious 7, Too Fast, Too Furious, Fast 5, The Fast and the Furious, that's the original,
right,
and then Fast and Furious 6, which I think is the best of all of them, which, by the way, is pretty amazing, that's the sixth. Of those 7 Fast and Furious...
You don't get that kind of thing with the Police Academy movies.
No, you do not.
The seventh one. Sixth one was not the best.
That is one through blank. Best to worst.
A steady decline from 1 to 11. Or
and by the way, the peak, not all that high to begin with. But anyway, Justin Lin, as it turns out, directed the two, in my opinion, and again, the correct opinion, the two worst of this franchise, but also the best and the third best. So off that scientific study, it appears to me this remake of Space Jam is either going to be awesome or horrible with no in-between whatsoever.
Or they just need to give him, like, they need to make, like, 8 Space Jams and let him direct 4. Space Jam, Space the Jam, Space Jam 6, 2 Space, 2 Jam.
And in between, Rob Cohen and John Singleton will direct a couple.
That actually, I think, of the most amazing part that I've just been hearing you say all the names of the Fast and Furious movies together, I've decided is the most remarkable part of the franchise.
Well, you know, by the way, too, that your franchise is doing awesome when the fourth one no longer even requires a number.
It's just
Fast and Furious, which is incredibly easy to mistake with the first one. Which was might have been their idea
because the third one wasn't very good.
No,
that
it was
Tokyo
not Tokyo Drift.
Drift. I've seen that one.
Oof.
And maybe they were just trying to make people think they were re-releasing the first one.
Either way, though, you're right.
But they make so much money at this point, they're going to keep coming up with combinations of the words Fast and Furious to make a movie.
Well, the next one, I believe, is just called Fast 8. And it's my understanding, I believe Vin Diesel said that they're looking to make 10. They're hoping that they can end up making 10. And by the way, even though I was underwhelmed by Furious 7, there's no reason for them to stop. Forget the money. All in all, they've actually been pretty good.
You know what? They really could have even shortened it more than Fast 8. They could have just did an F8 and called it Fate.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Or for the ninth, just F9. Fine. And then for 10.
I'm not sure that's how it works.
And then for 10.
Phonetically, but I like it anyway.
And then for 10, it's just F, 1-0. It's close enough to Fiend.
No. You had me, and then you lost me. All right, those are your big headlines of the day. Arguably, your big headlines of the day. Still to come. No, I understand. You're going to point to this as one of those, yes and, Brian. I'm not sure this deserves a yes and. You know, we have that discussion
sure.
Sometimes, yes, go, don't bring things to a halt. Still to come, the secret audio from the LaMarcus Aldridge pitch meeting. We will tell you where Byron Scott's statue, Andy, where it goes. Luke Walton.
Wow.
That was fast.
That was, Fast and Furious. That was Fate. Fine. And by the way, the coaching search is now
Fiend. That's exactly where they bring it full circle.
See? That thing went
down. As they say, that escalated quickly.
That thing went down fast.
All right, so let's start here. Your thoughts just first of all on Luke. Just the idea of Luke Walton as head coach of the Lakers, and then we'll get into process and some of the other ancillary things after.
Well, and look, you and I spent a lot of time covering Luke when he was with the Lakers, and he's always been one of those guys who seems like he's a coach in the making. He's also always been a guy who gets along very well with other with other teammates. He blends well. He's somebody that I think can get along well in different settings. I think he's open to, the suggestions of a coaching staff. He's not somebody that, needs the glory or is insecure about where he is. And this is something that I think will come in very handy for an organization that, whether they like it or not, needs to rebuild, and they need to have security in their rebuild.
Yeah, and you hear Steve Kerr talking about him and some of the guys on Golden State, and I understand that, the idea of, anybody can walk in and coach that team. It's not so much that he coached the Warriors to, 39-4, which
yes.
is good. I mean, that's a very good record, 39-4. But had he been 35-9 or whatever the number is, or even, 43-0 or whatever it is, I'm less impressed by the record as I am how people talk about what he did in that job. Because it is not easy to coach stars. It is not easy to coach in a situation where the expectations are incredibly high. And, yes, he had Steve Kerr was still there. He was a presence and all that. But Luke Walton had to run the show there for a while. And by all accounts, did a great job in using a staff, being, present with his players and the relationships there and all that. Those guys are sad that he's leaving. And I know, whether you think Phil, for example, is a great executive or not, he's a great basketball mind.
Oh, yeah.
He loves Luke. Steve Kerr loves Luke. Kobe said Luke should be a coach. I mean, there aren't a lot of people you can find who aren't going to advocate for Luke Walton as a head coach in the league. And what I like about it, he's exactly the kind of guy that, 2 years ago, you and I were sitting here talking about, God, I wish they could go out and get a person who fits that profile. He's young. He's, a good communicator. He's forward thinking. He's a little bit out of the box. He can grow with
the franchise. And I don't. Walton's not going to be a great coach next year. Be a good one. Be better than Byron.
Yes.
Low bar to step over. But he's not.
You almost have to step under it.
Yeah, so get a shovel. He's not going to be great next year. But the Lakers don't need him to be great next year. They need him to develop and grow. And so in 2 or 3 years, 4 years, when the Lakers are playing, hopefully, significant games in the playoffs and all this other stuff, you have a guy who's ready to go and do it. And I think there's nothing about it that I don't like.
No.
There really isn't.
I mean,
in terms of how he fits with the organization.
Oh, absolutely. And also, too, I mean, when Byron Scott was hired, there it was in part for the PR of it and getting people excited by his connection to the Lakers and Showtime and L.A. And, you know, that when they brought Byron out for his introductory press conference, I mean, they basically brought out half of Showtime. And there was obviously cosmetics behind that hiring. Luke, we've seen it, you know, on Twitter, at Cam Brothers. The reaction has been extremely excited
yes.
and positive from Laker fans. And yes, that is in part because they have a connection to Luke and they know Luke. And I think, you know, now that they've removed the period where all they did was bag on Luke, they now like him again. You know, it's similar to the way we've talked about our mother
right,
remembers
with
the dog. But they're bringing in Luke in a lot of ways. I think there are a couple ways you could argue that maybe aren't totally the right reasons.
Well, I want to get into that in a second.
By and large, they are bringing in Luke for the right reasons in reasons that actually excite fans.
Right. You know who else is really excited about this?
Who?
People who want to sell veggie burritos outside Staples. Hey, man, you going to see Luke tonight?
You know what, though? Actually, that would be more appropriate if they had hired Bill Walton as the coach.
Yeah, but Luke's got a dead.
No,
he's got the little bear.
But Luke, though,
Luke's
is really.
Bear tattoo.
Luke is really, though, he's more of a beach San Diego guy. He's really more if you were looking to sell fish tacos outside Staples Center than veggie burritos.
You know what? We can bring them all together. Veggie burritos and fish taco guys.
Sure.
All right. So let's talk about that because it's an interesting point you made. I actually wrote about this on the blog, which is frankly rare. I've done a lot of writing on the blog.
It's the Yeti.
Podcast.
It's the Yeti of blogs.
It's a yearly blog post. We've been using our Facebook page a lot for that. You can just search and like us at Kamenetsky Brothers Facebook page. Let's list all the reasons the Lakers could have hired him that were bad reasons. Luke Walton knows what it is to be a Laker.
Terrible reason.
He's a Laker champion.
Terrible reason.
He is a sought-after free agent who can make the Lakers look good by going out and getting him.
I have a feeling
right.
that played a little bit
I'm sure
bit
it did.
This.
And that's not a terrible reason. Just because
it's a bad reason if that was elevated
above
I think he's a good coach.
Right. You know,
then it is a bad reason.
He's a hot name that will make Laker fans happy.
Bad reason.
Take all of those potential. Here's another one. It screws Phil. Theoretically, it could also screw Jim, depending on your point of view.
I was going to say, right, what they ought to be doing right
it
now.
It screws Phil this year. Like, he took Phil's guy away from him. Like,
screws Phil this right. year, but for next year, they already ought to be getting their lawyers together to prepare for an eventual collusion lawsuit from the rest of the league. A lawyer, by the way, that knows what it means to be a Laker.
That's right. So, you know, you have guys, and to their credit, I'm sure Jim is aware of this whole, well, doesn't this open the door for Phil to come back narrative that's going to come out of it? And they went ahead and hired him anyway. And so I give them a lot of credit for that. But let's say they considered all of that stuff above even the basketball stuff. And it was a horrible process. He's still a great fit because he happens to be a really good basketball mind.
But you know what?
And fits in, you know, even if they ended up hiring him for the wrong reasons, he still has the potential to be a great fit because of all the other qualities.
He does have the potential, though. But it is though, and I say this, by the way, I preface this by saying I'm somebody who's happy with the hire. And I think it was a good hire. But it is very important that the number one reason is because they think he's going to be a great coach, not the other stuff. That he happens to be a great fit, that would be more happenstance as opposed to the driving reason to do it.
Serendipity, if you will.
Right. Because they cannot screw this up, Brian.
No.
This has to work out because they have been a revolving door at coach since Phil left. The reality is, even though I think Luke Walton will be a good coach, the sample size for judging
sure.
him as a head coach is
it's
very small. in a totally different setting than what he's entering.
There's no question.
So it is very important that they thought coaching potential number one, yeah. what it means to fans number two. If that's flipped, and even if coaching is two, that does give me a little bit of concern.
It gives me concern about them. It doesn't give me concern about Luke.
No, it does give me concern about Luke because it could mean that they're overrating it.
Well, no, because
they didn't talk to other.
I'm taking other people's
right, but there are,
comments and opinions
sure,
of
but there
Walton
are other, fine,
into
there,
consideration.
Fine, but there are other people around the league, like, say, Torry Messina, who is extremely well thought of, more experienced than Luke, and had been on the list until they shut it down upon interviewing and then hiring Luke. Those are other guys who would have been well thought of as well and would have been positively received by a lot of people. And
I think Messina would have been less positively received.
The point being, though, is they shut down this search immediately. So they have to be right. And because they have to be right, the number one reason that they did this has to be coaching potential.
I certainly hope so. But you know,
it has to
be. But the point is, I think he's good enough that even if they did it for the wrong reasons, it could still work out. There are a couple things about it that are a little surprising to me. The speed of the interview didn't surprise me, or that didn't really surprise me, only because if that's the guy that they identified that they wanted, yeah, the other jobs, Sacramento's out there, Houston is out there, New York is out there, aren't necessarily all that appealing, and it's harder to imagine Walton, who is going to have his choice of jobs going forward, saying, yeah, I'll go to Sacramento, despite what Michael Thompson says. Well, you don't want to let people get into a room with your guy if you want that guy.
Sure.
If he's number one on your list, and they are, it's not like they didn't know who Walton was.
No, absolutely.
I mean, they have a lot of, it's one interview and people are making a big deal out of that, but it's one interview after knowing the guy for, you know, two decades or a decade and a half.
They knew Byron for like four. And they made him
right. It was a terrible idea at the time. And so that part of it doesn't bother me. If he's your guy, and I think even you can argue as Messina slightly better, it's hard to make an argument that Walton isn't a very good choice. So if you want to debate whether or not somebody's better, we can do that. But I don't think he's better to the point of perhaps risking losing the guy that you're going after. The part that surprises me a little bit and tells you how much Walton wants to come here, I was a little surprised he'd take the job.
Yeah.
Because a month ago, if you'd asked me, would Walton leave to come here based on, you know, with everything that's going on, with the idea that, you know, the front office could be gone next year, although I don't necessarily think any GM, Phil or someone else, would come in and immediately run Luke Walton out of the building, because most GMs would be like, yeah, he's a good young coach we want to have. But that instability, the stuff with the roster, the uncertainty around just everything with the team, I wasn't sure he'd actually want the job alluring it would be. So I do like the fact that Walton really wants to be here and I think believes that he can take a bad team and make it work over time.
They gave him all the money.
They
gave him all the money.
Was it between 5 and 6 with incentives over, and it's a 5-year deal?
Yep.
They gave him a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
That will smooth over some of the rough edges that people have.
Well, I mean, look, the reality is, too, as much as this roster is in need of development, there's a lot of questions about it, Luke could not possibly do a worse job with the foundation they're looking to build than Byron.
I mean, look, again, if they chose him for all the wrong reasons, the Lakerness making a splash, he's still, even if Luke Walton is a Trojan horse unleashing modernity into El Segundo, like unwittingly, they don't know what they're bringing, it's still a good idea. And so I am very excited about it. And if you want to quibble about the process, you can. I like the process because they had a plan and they executed and they actually got their guy. So I'm on board.
No, I'm
kudos to management.
I'm definitely
on board.
They
got this one right. And it's a ballsy hire for Jim because he knows all people are going to say is, wow, you just made it that much easier for Phil to come back. Because again, even with Luke, they're not making the Western Conference finals this year.
Such a bad idea, by the way, to bring back Phil.
Let me ask you this. Does Walton help with free agents?
It depends the free agent. Like, for example, I think Walton makes it less likely that he comes, because it's one thing for Kevin Durant to trust his prime with this young and undeveloped of a roster. It's another thing for him to trust his prime with a front office that has been very publicly in turmoil.
Right.
And it's another thing to trust his prime with a first-time head coach. I cannot imagine that he's going to do all three.
Yeah. All right.
But I think for a guy like Al Horford, maybe, if you're interested in him, Harrison Barnes in particular, who I've had.
Al Horford, who's being coached right now by a guy who was a longer time on the bench with San Antonio, Mike Budenholzer, but first-time head coach.
Right. And also, too, a guy like Harrison Barnes, who I've thought for quite a while the Lakers should be earmarking. He's the rare young player with actual championship experience. And you got to figure that Luke, because he has a good relationship seemingly with everyone on that roster, he has a good relationship with Harrison Barnes. He might be able to pry away Barnes, maybe convince the Lakers to put out an offer that Golden State would have difficulty matching with their other contracts.
You're
coming
pretty close to a max to do it.
Well, you know what? At this point,
but that's true of everyone.
It's true of everyone. Like, I don't even know what overpaid is anymore. What I look at right now is just, does the money seem wildly out of proportion with who the player is? And does the player make sense? And if the first part you say no and the second part you say yes, then okay.
Right. Even if you say yes to the first part and still yes to the second part, because we're all going to have to get used to the new economics where Nick Batum is probably going to get max offers or very close to it this offseason. Horford definitely will, but he deserves it. He's a great player. You know, it just with the cap going up and everybody having money to spend.
I mean, look, we're talking about the talk on Jordan Clarkson, it's going to take like 15, right. $17 million a year. Jordan Clarkson doesn't seem like a $17 million a year player, but he is.
No.
In this NBA,
no, you're right.
He is.
No, he doesn't seem that way, but he absolutely is. And even he says, I am the worst defender ever. That's the one thing Byron was totally right about.
Yes,
I am a terrible defender.
He was bad.
I think he can help.
But
I think he's a very appealing guy.
I think Luke can help in that way, yes.
Right. And that's important.
Yes,
and
it is.
And you know, the roster ultimately sells things and all that, but the coach – who can communicate a vision, and it is particularly as time goes on, hopefully, if everything, you know, knock on wood, as Walton develops, continue to develop a culture, develop, and he can go into a room and communicate that. As much as we mock sort of the pitches and this and that, whatever, you do need a guy who can go into the room and recruit. Byron could not do that. Byron would repel people. And I'm not trying to be a jerk. I mean, but in terms of a free agent making up his decision to come here, the Byron Scott is a negative. He's something you put in the, well, they're going to give me a bucket of money, but look at the bucket.
That's probably why they kept telling Byron for all of these interviews that they were in Rosemead.
Right.
Byron, oh, wait. Sorry, we met El Segundo.
Right. The guy, I don't want to play for the grumpy man in the Kangol. It's just not what I want to do. I think Walton helps that, and I think it's important. So, that's where the name value and getting the hot free agent
sure.
coach makes
it can't hurt.
Yeah. All right. So that is Luke Walton, Andy, which brings us to our next item of business, figuring out what to do with Byron Scott in our statue game. The rules, of course, every Laker gets a statue and we decide based on how good they are. Proximity to Staples Center, where all the good statues
sure.
are, and size, like what your statue's doing and how big it is.
Right.
That
exactly.
tells you how good you are.
Life size or even bigger than life, you were a very good player for the Lakers or somebody who meant a lot
right.
to the Lakers for various reasons. Byron is a really interesting
case. This is tricky.
Because he was a hell of a Laker as a player, averaged as a Laker 15 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 steals, career 37%. From three, including in 1985, a 43% clip where he led the league in three-point percentage, and they won a title that year.
Yeah, that's like Steph Curry numbers back then. Like
yeah.
In the 80s, that's like Steph.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, granted he took 0.7 a game, but still, by league standards.
Less, that's less like Steph.
But like by league standards, that was pretty huge.
Three-pointer was exotic back then.
It really was. It was like, that was a unicorn. You look at some of his franchise records, 8th in all-time games played, 7th in minutes, 8th in field goals, 9th in points, 4th in threes and 3 attempts, 4th in steals, 10th in win shares, 10th in offensive win shares, 10th in VORP.
Byron does not know what VORP is.
Not a clue.
If you're gonna, you can't present that to Byron as one of his great career accomplishments and have him understand.
No, he thinks
Byron does not know VORP.
He thinks a VORP is like a spaceship or something. He has
something
no
from
clue.
A Doctor Who episode.
He also doesn't know what Doctor Who is.
Byron knows more about analytics or Doctor Who?
Ooh. Probably analytics.
Probably analytics, but not by as much as you would think.
I think Byron knows nothing. I mean, and look,
what if he was a secret, like, just closet Doctor Who geek?
There are few, if any, forms of forget television shows, forms of entertainment that I can picture Byron taking to less than Doctor Who. And I'm not even making fun. I've never seen Doctor Who. I don't watch it.
These 100 tacos should provide ample sustenance for the Doctor Who festival.
Yeah.
God, I don't like Doctor Who, but I would love Byron a lot more if I found out he was a closet Doctor Who fan.
That would be
shocking.
That would be
shocking.
Crazy if he just every Sunday or whenever that show comes on, he like like puts on his Kangol and watches Doctor
Honey,
Who.
Honey, don't talk. It would be no less surprising, like if he like unzipped his face and revealed himself to be like stealth Luke Walton or something like that, like an episode of Scooby Doo.
Yes,
like Luke somehow got Byron fired. And it would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you darn meddling kids.
It is damn near impossible to picture Byron watching Doctor Who.
And Jeff Katz on the couch every Sunday.
Again, we're not even making fun of him. Neither one of us watches the show.
No. I saw it like 3 times on PBS and was thoroughly confused and totally bored.
So on one hand, Byron's numbers and his time with 3 championship teams, with Showtime and the Lakers, he was an indelible part of that, and he's an indelible part of some of the best memories and high points of franchise history. On the other hand, Brian, it was his time as Lakers head coach.
Less didn't go as well.
38-126 over 2 seasons. He is, Brian, the furthest below 500 of any coach in NBA history.
Which is impressive.
Yes, it is.
It's actually, I will say, I finally believe he will not be given an opportunity to improve on that record. This is probably where, as the Sundays would say, the story ends.
Well, on the plus side, though, he will not be given an opportunity to deprove on it either.
Well, that's what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Like, get further away. Like, this is his record.
this is Mark.
So you treat this exactly like you do talking about the Lakers record for the last couple of years, when I say like second best, I mean like, you know, closest to having the best lottery.
So basically what you're saying is like this is sort of his calling card as a coach. He's like the Ed Wood of coaches.
Basically.
Like he's remembered as the worst ever.
He's a cooler at this point. It's like, whoa, 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 we're getting a little too good. Somebody go get Byron.
Instead of sitting down next to a hot table and everyone loses, right. He just sits down next to a hot
Byron
roster.
Or one of the 17 people who've played Doctor Who.
So then what do you give more stock to? I mean, and how do you figure this out? Right. Because, again, he was a huge part of Showtime.
Here's how I've
– And an L.A. native.
His great success as a player makes him worthy of high-end placement.
You know? Sure.
I think I put Ori – somewhere on the property, like L.A. Live, the convention center, like not right there with the big guys. But, you know, Byron Scott is in any other, like a normal franchise, he's a, you know, his jersey's retired.
Oh, yeah.
So he's, Byron the player is somewhere on campus, so to speak. But you mentioned the coaching thing. As a steward of Kobe, he managed to screw that up a lot. Kobe made it through. But not because of Byron. So I think you could put Coach Byron at like Forest Lawn, which is a big cemetery, because that seemed to be where he was trying to send Kobe, or at the lobby of Cedars-Sinai, again, another place that he was going to try to send Kobe. But I think what I've decided to do is have a statue on the other side, being near Rosa Mexicana, on the Olympic side of LA Live. So he's still on campus, but about as far as you can get without being across the street. In honor of his playing days, you have a statue of Byron Scott shooting a three-pointer next to a statue of Coach Byron Scott with his arms folded, looking on with disapproval.
So you're giving him 2 statues?
I'm giving him 2 statues. One where he's a player and doing something really constructive, and then another. Because I was like, you put one on campus like Byron the player, and then the other one in the lobby of Cedars-Sinai or something like that, or at the cemetery, because, again, he's trying to kill Kobe. But I'm going to, in honor of the work he did as a Showtime Laker, that's what I settled on. Byron shooting a three-pointer with Coach Byron arms folded looking on with disapproval.
Okay, that is an interesting approach. I decided to go with, Brian, a life-size statue, excellent craftsmanship. I mean, it's really going to be a very good-looking statue. But instead of putting it anywhere near Staples Center or the LA Life Plaza or whatever, I'm going to put the statue in front of the Forum.
Oh.
And it's in Inglewood where Byron grew up, Morningside High. It's the place where Byron won championships as part of Showtime. And also that period is more or less where Byron believes basketball as a game, as a coaching style, as a philosophy ended. Like, pretty much that's when basketball ceased to evolve.
It's just, and that was the end of it.
Right. So I would give him a magnificent looking statue in front of the Forum. He will be in uni, but with his arms folded.
How about, I thought about that too. How about in your thing, you could put him on top of a depiction of the Earth and have it be flat.
It's
is that too meta?
I believe that's too meta.
A couple other things I thought of. You could have a statue of Coach Byron near next to the statue of Kobe, just letting it do whatever it wants. Or a statue of Byron outside some sort of sweatshop, so that as a reminder to the people inside that they need to man up.
Either way,
so those are my other.
And either way, we no matter where you place the statue, we agree it should be a very good looking life size statue
that honors his performance.
Right. All in all, the positives with Byron should outweigh the negatives when it comes to his statue.
A little like shooting fish in a barrel, there. That's okay.
A little bit, but you know what?
I don't want to say we were dancing on the man's grave, but you know what? I mean, neither one of us can really dance.
Neither one of us can dance, and you know what, Byron is a very wealthy man who's now probably up to 54 holes of golf a day. He'll be just fine.
He's fine. And I doubt he listens to the podcast.
Doesn't anymore.
Pretty sure.
Doesn't anymore.
All right, moving on, Andy, to our next feature. It's something we do now most weeks, not every week. As you know, Mitch and Jim failed last summer in their free agent pitch meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge. It was a little too Hollywood-based. They got a second meeting that went a little better. Not good enough to get him. And then they've tried to learn from it since then. They should have destroyed the tapes. Instead, we got them.
Right. They actually recorded this so they could go back and watch to see, you know, why are we not landing these guys?
Right.
But again, we got hold of this audio.
Really should have destroyed those.
And we plan to reveal bits of the audio in each podcast from now until the end of this podcast's existence.
Until the end of time. It's a little segment we call Secret Audio from the LaMarcus Aldridge pitch meeting.
LaMarcus, if I could, I'd like to step away from this talk about Hollywood and speak to you about a more urgent matter regarding your basketball career in Los Angeles. Sushi. Sushi is comprised of raw fish, rice, and seaweed. As someone who spent his career in the Pacific Northwest, I imagine you're not terribly familiar with fresh seafood, and therefore, such an exotic offering as sushi must be incredibly intimidating. Well, fear not, my boy. Once you put on that Laker jersey, you'll immediately develop a taste for sushi. It's the food of kings in Los Angeles, a sign of status, power, wealth, and celebrity. On a typical Wednesday night, you could be playing basketball in front of George Lopez sitting courtside, then eating sushi at the very next table after a game. What a thrill! Come to Los Angeles, LaMarcus, and experience for yourself the glamour that is sushi. Ha-cha-cha.
And there you have it. That's the audio.
The flaw in that, actually, is that I've been to the Pacific Northwest, and a great deal of
sushi.
It's
such a bad pitch. A
great deal of sushi.
I mean, it's so demeaning.
I respect that they did stop at the movie pitches there for a second. But again, it's not well thought.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you're getting serious. Sushi.
I'll be honest with you. Fish in Los Angeles isn't even as fresh as it is in Portland.
It's just a bad
pitch.
It just lets you know that they were so out of touch with like the rest of the world, and it gave this feeling of just everything revolving around L.A. It's a bad pitch.
Yep. All right, so we will continue bringing you more of the secret LaMarcus Aldridge pitch meeting audio as the podcast continues. But we wrap things up this week. One of our favorite Twitter follow, perhaps, is Magic Johnson. Because when Magic is good, Magic is spectacular. So we are introducing this week a segment called This Week in Magic Tweets. He was on fire.
Oh, yeah.
This week, Andy. He was on fleek. He was keeping it 100.
Oh, man. For like the last 24 hours, I don't know if he's been drinking or something. I don't know what's going on with Magic. But
nobody in the history of Twitter has mastered the art of putting out tweets that are absolutely irrefutable better than Magic Johnson. For example, this week, Laker Nation. The Lakers should call LeBron James' agent. We know he's going to stay in Cleveland, but they should go after him just in case he leaves.
As I tweeted out, retweeted with that tweet, Jim Buss, put down whatever it is you're doing and start taking notes. This, by the way, is free agency 101.
Even Hollywood Pitch Guy thinks it's a good idea. Laker Nation, the first free agent the Lakers should go after is Kevin Durant.
Yes.
Irrefutable.
I guarantee, by the way, it's, you know what's crazy about it? It's irrefutable, but still something that Mitch and Jim probably hadn't thought of. It probably had not occurred to them to go after the highest profile, best
free agent. But what else, Magic, they were saying? Laker Nation, DeMar DeRozan should be one of the free agents we go after this summer.
Oh, by the way, look who's talking we. Mr. Yeah. Sold off my share of it. Spent the last... By the way, too, I love the idea. You know, I can't imagine why Kevin Durant might have any apprehension about joining the Lakers, given the rosy picture of the front office right. Magic's painted for the last three or
Magic.
4 years.
So, you know, those are some good ones. He also had these. Now, sometimes he delves in more into basketball analysis, Andy, as opposed to just advice. The Warriors are so good because they play well together. They make the extra pass, and they're one of the best defensive teams in basketball. Irrefutable.
Yep.
And finally, my favorite tweet of the week. Actually, no, that's not true. The one about LeBron is my favorite. My second favorite. With Steph Curry on the floor, the Golden State Warriors are a championship team. Without him, they are still a very good team. Thank you, Magic
Hashtag
Johnson.
Hashtag analysis.
You try to tear down that argument.
No. He puts out... He puts out pretty much nothing but factually correct news 15 to 17 hours after it happens.
My wife used to be an editor at a teen magazine, and they didn't use exclamation points as liberally as Magic.
No, the only time Magic has ever tweeted out something untrue is when he tweeted out that the type of basketball the Lakers were playing under Byron Scott was exciting.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
That was refutable.
It was definitely
refutable. That was refutable with an exclamation mark.
It was refuted by everything. All right, so that's that. That's the This Week in Magic tweets. I am fairly certain he will provide us more content for this segment as the summer goes along. That is all the
keeping
time, Andy, that we have.
Keeping 2.9 million people and counting informed with every tweet.
There's so much extraordinary use of exclamation points.
The world is more dialed in with information because Magic joined Twitter.
Oh, man. He is the Magic Man. All right, so that's all the time we have. We will certainly get into much more of the playoffs, the future of the Lakers with Luke Walton. I think Mitch may be talking to the media this week, so we'll bring you some of that maybe next time we talk.
Hey, guys. Luke's here.
Luke Walton's a second-round draft pick with
the Lakers.
Yeah, any question you ever ask Mitch, he just gives you a laundry list of history with no actual answer.
We are excited to have Luke with us.
As you know, the ways you can improve teams are either draft, free agency, or
we know. Mitch could just hand
master
out.
Master the filibuster.
He could just hand out a leaflet.
Mitch on C-SPAN.
We know. I mean, he's like one of these politicians right now that is just on message, and you know, regardless of what you think of Ted Cruz, you know exactly what Ted Cruz is going to say before he even speaks.
He's going to say something about Ted Cruz.
At this point, Mitch, you know what he's going to say.
All right, we'll see everybody next week.